and a sure success. All for one and one for all.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Vinnie with a Y is the most important question you can ask. On the Vinnie Eastwood Show, we do like to give a lot of plug play to, you wouldn't call them so much as influential as you would inspirational people who have amazing stories to tell, incredible experiences, and are just dang interesting to listen to, quite frankly. And I try to give those people a little bit more plug play than mainstream media will ever do. On Kiwi Collaborators today, Dr. Tony Minervino from the healing business here in Auckland, New Zealand. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Actually, you know, I think inspirational people are influential. I think they're the most influential people today because everyone wants to be inspired. Inspiration is such a more exciting frequency to be in than fear and apprehension and confusion. You know, people need to be inspired that they're okay and that everything that's going on in the world is perfect, exactly the way it is. There's no last-minute thing to do or there's no last-minute thing to get done. You know, we've prepared our whole lives for this. And who knows, we've been preparing countless lives for this. So there's nothing to worry about. Everything is perfectly in alignment and perfectly integrated. And we're all at one and the same time a part of a perfect whole and the whole thing.
Well, you know, it seems to me that we kind of fit in, even if we don't fit. You know what I'm saying? We somehow find a way, because it's like, if you're there at all, it means that you obviously must fit somewhere. Otherwise, there would be no reason for your friggin' existence.
In a multidimensional infinite universe, which this is, everything is experientially available. You know, so while everyone is an essential part of a perfectly integrated whole, you can still, when you act out of your subconscious program, experience not fitting in. Right? And it's important to realize that, you know, we acquired our 3D program, most of it before the age of two. We had both our parents' program, which they got from their parents, which they got from their parents. And essentially, anyone that was bigger, stronger, more capable of surviving than ourselves became a source of information about what this reality is about and how it works. And by the age of seven, the state-sponsored educational system furthered our program by teaching us such things as seeing is believing, which means if you can see it, it might be true. But if you can't see it, obviously it's not true. So anything you can't see, you don't believe. You know, except of course, for the whole religious story, which totally disempowers the individual.
Well, you know, and it strikes me, you can't see what you can't believe in some cases as well, simply because either A1, you just don't have the conceptual possibility of even understanding what it is you're seeing, so therefore you don't even see it at all. And this is the kind of problem that we have in our society, where people have the blinders on to the point that they are walking off a freaking cliff. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My remarkably fabulous special guest from the Awareness Party is Dr. Tony Minervino, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there to drink my wine.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to come and take it all. It's what happens when you live in a world where, for some reason, people have forgotten that they're connected to each other and to the planet that they live on, right? It's when you don't fulfill your role in the circle that the circle breaks off and becomes a line that ends to nowhere. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, speaking of ending in nowhere. And my very special guest from the New Zealand Awareness Party, which is not a political party, it's a political movement, as they say. It's Tony Minervino. Welcome back, my friend.
Thanks, Vinny. Yeah, the Awareness Party is very definitely not a political party. We don't field candidates or anything. What our objective is to wake up people to the realization that, you know, we do have problems, and we are the solution. So once we went to the realization that we can't continue doing things the way we're doing them, we can make the decisions that allow us to start acting in a sustainable way, one that is not based on competition but cooperation, one that's not based on isolation and protection but community. You know, community is the way forward. As you know, I'm a chiropractor. But I realized back in 1996 that I was able to help people get just so far in terms of experiencing health and a sense of well-being and no further. And I knew something wasn't shifting. And I asked the big question, so what isn't shifting? And what I realized is what isn't shifting is consciousness. You know, if people continue to see things the same way and make the same choices and perform the same actions, choose the same courses of action, they're going to keep creating the same thing that they're creating. And I realized that, you know, while my intention was to heal people, actually I was enabling them because enabling them to continue doing things the way they're doing, and then they come to me periodically, and I would undo the physical manifestations that are showing up in their body, which are reflecting back to them the frequency of reality they're creating. Because every thought we entertain, every action that we perform affects not only us, but it affects the whole reality. And our most intimate reflection of the reality we're creating is our body. In fact, wherever our thinking is creating restriction and limitation in our life, it shows up in a corresponding area of the body. The body is always functioning perfectly. Essentially, people do not need to heal. They're already whole and complete. All we need to do is let go of the programming and everything that separates us from experiencing our wholeness. The most important thing today is mind-heart coherence. Getting the mind in the same frequency as the heart. Because the mind just figures, it's a computer, but the heart knows. And it's the heart that's connected up to our expanded self and the whole of reality.
What I was wondering for a moment is that, is a human mind in its limited capacity, like let's say, for example, one human mind can't contain all knowledge of all human minds at the same time, can it, sort of thing? I mean, there's possibilities of traveling to other planes, and there's been a lot of research well documented, and it's my understanding, a lot of latent psychic ability within the human brain that's still untapped. And my thoughts is that if you're going to try and understand reality as a whole, you should approach it with the knowledge that it's not going to be an easy thing to do. And you may experience some difficulty in trying to attain a proper understanding.
There's definitely a distinction to be made between what is and what you perceive as being what is. Okay, there's the whole thing. You can't possibly comprehend the whole thing until you are the whole thing, which requires you to totally release your identification with the individualized ego and allow the consciousness to expand to encompass the whole of creation. Because the mind is actually the field of being. There's no such place called the void where there's nothing, where one day a pea-sized particle of matter of incredible mass showed up and then for some reason exploded, and 94 seconds of 94 millionths of a second later, the universe as we know it was born. You know, that's a nonsense story. That's the science nonsense story, in contrast to the religious nonsense story that God created everything. He showed up, looked at the nothing and said, oh, well, let's have some light, and carried on from there. Both of those stories are total nonsense, and both of them serve to remove the individual from the seat of power and create their experiencing themselves as a tiny satellite in a massive universe that someone else created and is being controlled and operated by forces that are not only outside of our direct influence, but are unknowable because they're just beyond anything we can possibly comprehend or understand. That's total nonsense. The fact of the matter is, this is the waking dream. And it's very analogous to the sleeping dream. When you go to sleep, you create a whole reality, and you experience yourself as being in the reality being all around you. There's everything you'd expect in a reality. There's people, there's places, there's things, there's events going on, some of which are pleasant, some of which are unpleasant. But no matter how pleasant or unpleasant the dream is, when you wake up, the whole thing disappears because it only existed in your mind. And then we wake up to this, the waking reality, and we think this is real in contrast to the dream, which is only a dream. But in fact, this is the waking dream. And we are only always experiencing the reality where we're in the center. You know, we make a lot of assumptions like, you know, what I'm experiencing is the same as what you're experiencing. But it's not. I'm experiencing
reality. It's not a simultaneous experience. It's a different perspective. Like, for example, one person looking at the same hill from the opposite side of the hill as you technically is looking at the same objects, but they're looking at two completely different things.
I remember sitting on the front porch of this old house we lived in. We were in Portland, Oregon. We were right on the park blocks, which is the where the university campus is. And I'm sitting on the porch of this rather decrepit house that was to be actually condemned within a year. And I'm sitting on the porch, and I'm looking up on the hill at these beautiful houses. And there was this one house with a harp in the picture window. It was just gorgeous to behold, and it was just nestled beautifully in the mountains. And I thought, who's got the better seat? Them looking down at this house that's about to be condemned, or me sitting on the front porch looking out at that beautiful house? So, yes, even though we seem to be in the same reality, we're having a very different experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, does that mean that experience itself only really gets, well, experienced through your perspective, or is it possible to change your perspective, like to actually adopt somebody else's in a very literal way? Because I know that we can all influence how each other thinks and feels and activates simply through the words of our voice or our actions or our art or something along those lines. You can invoke certain responses in people. But is it possible to even really get inside somebody's head and actually feel precisely what they're feeling and see precisely what they're seeing?
Hey, you brought up something very interesting and important, Vinny, because actually most of us, until we wake up, are constantly attempting to adopt other people's viewpoints in order to be accepted and fit in. You know, one of the earliest drives that we have, and it shows up very obviously in school children, is wanting to be accepted and fit in. So we're constantly asking the question, okay, how do I have to be to fit in? So we perceive how other people see things, and we realize that if we pretend to see things the way they see things, then they'll be comfortable with us and accept us, and we'll be part of the group, and we'll be popular. Okay? But in fact, is it possible to see, to adopt another person's viewpoint? Not really, all right? It's only possible to truly be your own viewpoint and from that center expand to where you can include the other person's viewpoint without identifying with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's kind of like, well, it's kind of like going into a principal's office when you've been, and this has happened to me, by the way, accused of a crime that you haven't committed. and you saying, look, this never happened, okay? I'm completely innocent. The other person's totally making it up, okay? They lied. And the principal says, well, you know, I completely understand your position. You're suspended.
Benny, realistically, were you really totally innocent?
Yes, I was. I'll tell you the exact thing. Okay, we were sitting around, and I think I was 16 or something, discussing the concept of racism, right? And just over this exact discussion about what perspectives are, and I was there with a Maori girl and a guy from South Africa and me, and I said, you know, how do different races actually express their racism? You know, and I came up with the conclusion that when Caucasian racism, if it's against blacks or Jews or whomever, they usually use jokes to belittle and demean the other race, right? And I was wondering if that phenomenon was the same when Maori, who are racist against whites, say the exact same thing. You know, and the Maori girl asked me to say an example of a racist joke, and I said, okay, well, just for the sake of argument, there is a joke. What do you call a Maori on a clothesline? A Maori go round. Now, completely humorless, not funny at all. I'm just doing it for the point of discussion. She then went to the principal and said that I'd told her that Maoris were all on the dole, none of them worked, and they were all bums anyway. And I got suspended.
Right.
And interestingly enough, when I went to get backed up, the other people who were sitting at the table, the other people in the class, they said, nah, that's what you said, Vinny. And I was like, what's going on here? And it turned out that everybody just didn't like me anyway. So they found an excuse to get rid of me for 3 days.
Yeah, you got caught up in the political correctness washing machine. Vinny, you know, it's true that we use humor to subtly disrespect or cast in a poor light, you know, people that we consider ourselves to be in competition with. But it's also true that when we really feel close to someone and we love them and appreciate them and totally include them in our lives, we also bust their chops a lot. You know, I discovered that when, as I was growing up, when people really like you, they call you names. You know, they give you funny nicknames and they make jokes about you. And, you know, keep in mind that only a black can call another black a nigger. You know, if any of us use the word, that's definitely a faux pas. Okay? Italians call each other, you know, guineas and wops and dagos. Okay? So if you're part of the group, then you can joke about the group. But if you're not part of that group, then it's not politically correct to say anything that's at all disparaging or demeaning. And
you see, now that was the thing. I was trying to have a calm, nice, rational discussion about a serious subject, and somebody decided to take it personally. And that is the danger that you take, isn't it, Tony, when you're dealing with people like that?
They took it out of context. And, you know, certainly if you're... Whenever you have three or more people, you're involved in politics, all right? So you have to be aware of what you're saying and carefully phrase it in a way that minimizes the possibility of people hearing something different than what you're saying. Because in terms of your influence on other people, it's not what you say. It's what they hear that influences them.
It's like it's like language is sort of like a protein structure that has to have 63,000 parts all assembled in the correct order in order to make the right protein in the body. So too, the words out of your mouth have to come out in a particular sequence and order so that the interpretation of what you say can't be taken in any other way. right? And this, but this is a difficulty, though, because that, the protein building, for example, that's something that our body innately knows how to do and automatically does it. But to learn to communicate in such a way that it cannot be misinterpreted, I don't know. Sometimes I like the misinterpretations because some of them are freaking hilarious. Other ones get you suspended.
Well, in either case, you're going to end up in the principal's office a great deal. Vinny, this is exactly why linguistics is such a powerful study, and neurolinguistics, the relationship between language and the nervous system, is so important. I mean, someone understands the relationship between language and the nervous system, and they totally comprehend the linguistic context in which the other person is experiencing life, then they can choose their languaging appropriately so that they elicit the proper or the desired response from that individual. You know, each language is not just an interpretation or a transliteration of every other language. The language of a people actually embodies their ethos. It embodies their innate viewpoint on reality and how they see things. In you don't really understand a people until you can dream in their language, okay? And while, you know, we know there's a difference between English and French and German and Greek, et cetera, the different peoples, even in the same, within the context of the same language, they think differently. You know, blacks phrase themselves differently than whites, and educated whites express themselves differently than lesser educated whites, etc. So you have to understand somebody's language. You know, for instance, when I grew up, bad was good. You know, people say, oh, man, that is bad, you know, which meant it was good. Okay. I remember at Georgetown University, I got a call from a fellow, William Livingston Washington, right? And this fellow spoke with an English accent and very cultured. And I thought, certainly I'm talking to an Englishman. Well, when I met him and he turned out to be black, I was totally taken aback because I grew up with black people talking like this, you know what I mean? And because this person spoke differently, I assumed he was a white English person. I began to realize that my experience was definitely setting the parameters of my perception. And as my experience expanded, I began to relax my expectations.
Yep. And I always say, Tony, that the secret to happiness is to have really low expectations. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Tony Minervino from the Awareness Party here in New Zealand. And we'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know the way it's going to go. 'Cause we can't see
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future from the fabulous fluoridated capital and the second most shakingest city in New Zealand. It's Auckland, and my fabulous and marvellous and somewhat awesome special guest and various other nice adjectives as well is Tony Minervino from the Healing Business. Welcome back.
The shakingest city, eh?
Second most shakingest. Second most.
I haven't felt much shaking, but I feel absolutely safe and secure sitting on top of 47 active volcanoes.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. It keeps your bum warm. Now,
you know, which brings up an important point. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, where is the safe place to be? And my answer is always the same. The only place to be is where you're excited about being. Follow your excitement. You know, you're not going to be able to figure out with your mind where to be or what to do or what's going on. The mind is absolutely hardwired to third density. If you're using your mind to figure out what's going on here, this time of unprecedented transformation and change, you're going to be here for a very long time. In fact, you're going to be here after the rest of us have moved on to a higher frequency of reality. You know, it's the heart-mind coherence that allows you to be in that frequency of excitement. And in the frequency of excitement is where life is. It's where life is happening. And wherever life is going, if you're in excitement, you're going with it.
Now, Tony, have you ever met somebody who has, say, spent a lot of time learning something which they don't actually enjoy and spent copious amounts of money on it? For example, getting an education in a subject that you're not actually particularly interested in, and they waste a whole period of their life only to wind up going off and doing something completely different later on once they realize that they have to follow their heart.
First of all, I don't think we ever make any wrong decisions, and I don't think we ever waste any time. And everything you learn adds a dimension to your perception of what's going on. You know, so while you might pursue a study which turns out to not be your career choice, it still contributes to expanding your viewpoint so that you're able to more completely comprehend the human experience.
I mean, yeah, no, but the problem is, I think it mostly helps you to completely comprehend what being $110,000 in debt is like.
Well, you know, there's always the possibility of looking at what's the limitation here, but there's also the possibility of looking at what's the opportunity here. What opportunity is this presenting for me? What doors are opening up for me as a result of the choices I've made? You know, and which door excites me most to walk through? And if you choose excitement, then you're in the frequency of excitement, which leads you into the next now moment of choice. And because you chose excitement in the last moment of choice, you're inclined to choose excitement in this moment of choice. That's how you live an exciting life, Vinny. You'll never live an exciting life by choosing what you think you should do or must do. That's called obligation. You know, whenever you say yes to something that doesn't excite you, you're choosing to experience a context which is not resonant with your heart. You know, that's what I mean by how important it is to come into that place of mind-heart coherence, where your thinking is actually consistent with who you are at a heart level.
Is that something that people innately know, or is that something that you kind of have to go through an entire journey to find out? I mean, do you believe in past lives and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, we've been here many times before, and it's kind of like each life is just remembering who you are again?
Yeah, well, whether we've been here many times before or we just remember many different lives, which either we or someone else live, we have access to, it doesn't really matter. You know, I don't get that wrapped up in what's happened before. I'm more interested in what's happening right now, because now is the moment of choice. In this now moment, I have a choice. I can choose love, or I can choose fear. I can choose expansion, or I can choose contraction. I can choose trust, or I can choose worrying about the possibility of a reality I don't prefer being most likely. In fact, that's how I define fear. I define fear as trusting that a reality I don't prefer is most likely. And I define doubt as an unswerving trust that a reality I do not prefer is most likely. You know, in every given moment, you get to choose how you want to see things. And I choose to see things in a way that opens up possibilities for expansion.
Well, you know what? I kind of res- I kind of resonate with that a little bit, Tony, because, you know, the idea of getting anything accomplished means by its very nature that the predominant thought in your head is, how can I accomplish this and then doing it, not what are the impediments to me accomplishing this and then thinking about it.
Exactly. What are the possibilities? What can I do right now to move in the direction of realizing, you know, this desired goal? Absolutely. And I see goals not necessarily as objectives to be achieved at all costs. I see goals as putting something out in front of you to get you moving in a certain direction. Because as you move in that direction, you can see things that you can't see from where you're standing. So a goal is not necessarily something you're absolutely going to achieve. It's just something to get you moving in a direction that allows you to see things that you can't see from where you're standing. Yeah, I mean, who amongst us knows what the real purpose of life is? I mean, I don't. I mean, I define the purpose of life for myself. But, you know, who knows what's really going on? I mean, the reality is, Benny, as we sit here talking, we're on a planet that at the equator is revolving at over 1,000 miles an hour, all right? And that planet is circling a sun, which is 93 million miles away, and the circumference is, what, pi r squared? So how fast do we have to go to get around the sun every year? And then the sun is in a dance with Sirius, and those two stars are dancing around a central star, and then the galaxy is in a dance with all the other galaxies around some other central sun, and the whole universe is moving off in a certain direction, expanding while it's going towards an unknown destination for an unknown reason. And we are all crew on a spaceship that's on this magnificent journey, and
And some people on that spaceship, I mean, they have no purpose. They're basically just Klingons. And, you know, and I was just thinking about this, is that when you come to try and understand things, some people get to the point where they think that they understand everything. And I thought, you know, that's just really strange. You know, you can't ever understand everything. The man who thinks he understands everything obviously knows nothing. And the man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough.
Yeah, well, knowing, experiencing that you know everything is the domain of the ignorant. Nonetheless, while, you know, none of us understand everything, we have a choice in every moment to decide that we know what we need to know or we don't. And if you know what you need to know in every now moment, you're confident that your choices are perfect and your actions are perfect, right? And while they may not always have comfortable results, nonetheless, they allow you to have an experience that enables you to access the knowledge that it's time to access right now. So, we each get to choose, are we okay or are we not? Are we properly positioned or are we not? Are we doing what it's appropriate for us to do or are we not? You know, and it's just a simple choice.
What about age here, Tony? Because some people, if they're, say, like 35 and they got a kid or something like that, they'll belittle me for how I think and how I do things, just saying, oh, you're just young, you just don't get it yet. That kind of ageism, I think, you know? isn't there just that many isms that you can discriminate with everybody off? I think that, you know, we discriminate against each other to the point where we're trying to paralyze others because we're afraid of thinking that we're the only ones not going anywhere.
Yeah, I picked up a quote a couple of weeks ago. It said, there's nothing wrong with today's teenagers that 20 or 30 years won't cure.
You know, and if you're still optimistic by the time you're 60, you must be off your rocker, you know. But to be optimistic while you're young is natural.
Well, you know, 60 used to be ancient, okay? When I was growing up, 40 was old, all right? And it really was. I mean, because 40-year-olds back then look a lot different than 40-year-olds look today. I mean, we are not aging at the same pace. You know, I think we get old as our viewpoint gets solidified and fixed. You know, but if we remain open-minded and we're going with the flow of life, you just naturally maintain that youthful outlook. And that youthful outlook, which is a decision you make within, expresses itself without, and you just age differently. I mean, there are people that are in their 60s that don't look it, you know, and there are people that in their 40s that look old. So it really depends on your mental state, you know, the choices you're making at a mental level.
Well, Will, he was talking about some 20-year-old girls who go out and get drunk every night and smoke like a pack of cigarettes a day, and they look like they're approaching 40 and they're not even out of their mid-20s yet. You know, and it's like the amount of damage you could do to yourself. And I coined a term, the seven visible signs of nihilism.
Yeah, well, there's the other side of it too, and that is people that are always choosing excitement in every now moment. They're in a state of excitement. They're in the frequency of excitement, which again is the frequency where life is. So they're constantly going to be perfectly expressing the life that they are here to express. I mean, because that's really the gift that each of us bring to the party is who we are. And that's why it's so essential to be authentic. You know, Oscar Wilde said, you know, you got to be yourself because everyone else is taken. You know, and as long as you're identifying with someone else as being superior to you, you're trying to be them and you're not authentically being yourself. So once you realize, once you make the choice that, hey, you know, I am the perfect who I am and how I see things is perfectly valid. And my viewpoint is just as valid as anyone else's viewpoint. And when you reach that state where you're okay, then you're willing to communicate who you are to everyone around you. And that's what allows for a productive conversation. Because until you're willing to be vulnerable and reveal who you are to the other, you're just allowing them to have an elaborate conversation with themselves.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I think you're right there, Tony. I'm taking that to the next level, one of my beliefs is that my opinion essentially does not matter because I don't, in my opinion, I don't originate any of the thoughts that I have. I mean, they're simply amalgamations, combinations of other people's thoughts that I've learned and been influenced by and then putting a recombination. So I don't claim to be original. I don't claim to be different or anything. It's just the same as everybody else. And I think that everybody else's opinion is actually more valuable to me than my opinion, because my opinion shouldn't matter quite so much to me because I know what it is, I know how I mean something, but for some reason other people think that my opinion matters to them less than it matters to me. And it's just that misunderstanding when I talk about something with people that are controversial or something on those lines. I'm just doing it as a means of talking about a particular topic that I find interesting, and I'm more interested in what they've got to tell me about it than what I've got to say about it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I know what you're saying, but nonetheless, Benny, you have your own personal viewpoint. I mean, let's face it, you're unique, just like everybody else. And you have your way of seeing things, so your viewpoint very definitely matters.
Okay, fair enough. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man.
Welcome back! Travel, I've had my share, man. This show is going out everywhere, man, including to New Zealand. thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. It basically really means an awful lot, you know? For some reason, people find it ironic that you can wind up talking to people and agreeing about things in such terrible times. My very special Kiwi collaborator for today, Tony Minovino from The Healing Business in Auckland, joins us now. Tony, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. Yeah, you know, there is no disagreement, and we're all ultimately in agreement. You know, we all have a viewpoint. We're all seeing things uniquely, and as we're able to share that with each other, it allows us all to, you know, expand our viewpoint. You know, once you're comfortable holding your own viewpoint and you're secure in your own viewpoint, then you can allow other people to hold their viewpoint without feeling threatened. And that's what allows us all to begin to experience how each of us is an essential part of a whole thing. And it's as we are able to embrace each other's viewpoint that we more and more progressively begin to experience the whole thing. And our reality expands.
Well, an expansive experience, right? That's the real goal here. If you're going to experience anything, you want to experience it fully so you feel like you're not missing out, right? And people, for some reason, they think that because they've got all this choice that they're not missing out on anything. I think that because we've got so many choices, most of which are completely worthless to our life experience in a lot of ways, that people really are missing out by having such a lot of it. Now, that doesn't mean to say that we should have some kind of a communist crackdown on political activity or anything of sorts. It simply means that for some reason, and I believe the reason is multifaceted, just like the agenda to control and exterminate the world, we have a society now that for some reason doesn't want the full experience. They're actually quite happy for less than their money is worth buying for, you know?
Well, I don't purport to know what the whole of society is choosing. But I don't think that any choice is inappropriate. I don't think any choice is wrong. You know, I think every choice we make allows us to have an experience which enables us to access the knowledge that it's time to access right now. And, you know, whenever someone presents to me in the office and says something like, my life isn't working, and, you know, I say, you know, what do you mean? And they say, well, you know, there's things showing up and there's things not showing up that, you know, I said, look, if you can walk in, sit down and complain that your life isn't working, it's very definitely working. You know, and one guy just refused to get it. I said, well, look, what would have to show up in your life for your life to be working? And he listed all those things, and I showed him the list. And I says, anything more to add to the list? He goes, no, if that was all present, my life would be working. And I asked him, I said, do you realize how many people had all these things in their life who died today? Their life is not working. If you can sit here and complain, your life is very definitely working. And the fact of the matter is, if you look around you and the universe is still present, you know that everything's perfect. Because the whole is made up of all these integrated parts. And if even the smallest subatomic particle was out of perfect relationship with every other subatomic particle, the whole universe would go into collision mode. The very fact that we're here and it's now means that everything is perfect. There is absolutely nothing to worry about.
Yeah, that's what I always say. There's nothing to worry about. Go and ambush them politicians. Go and ambush those people, you know. The camera's mightier than the sword, and you can accomplish a heck of a lot more by being cheeky than by being violent and aggressive.
Well, you know, what's outside us is always only a reflection of what's inside us. And what has to change and what must change and what is changing is what's going on between our ears. Because it's the thoughts that we choose to entertain that cause us to see things in the way we're seeing them. And whenever we're coming from fear, whenever we're entertaining a thought that's below the frequency of excitement, you know, then we're experiencing separation, and we're perceiving the potential problems. Okay, but when we're in excitement and we are in that frequency of love, if you will, we realize that everything is present, everything is perfect, exactly the way it is, and that there's absolutely nothing to be concerned about. There's nothing to worry about. You know, just do whatever it is that excites you to do, and just experience life unfolding. It's an eternal thing. You know, it had no beginning. It has no end. We're multidimensional infinite beings. We've always been here. The idea that we began at some point is just an idea. And the idea that we end at some point is just an idea. And if that's an idea that excites you to experience, go ahead and experience it. I choose to experience that we have no beginning, we have no end, we just are. And there's nothing in my experience that indicates or provides evidence that that's ever going to change.
Well, I think that's a grand point to, leave it on, Tony. I'd like to thank you extremely for coming on and being up so early on this fabulous day in the sunny slave capital of Auckland, New Zealand. Fire out your websites.
Yes, it's thehealingbusiness.com.
Thehealingbusiness.com. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. That wraps it up for another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you want to check out the archives, either at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, where we post up the archives each day, commercial-free, for your listening and intellectual brain-spasming pleasure. Because, you know, get your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy. And even if you don't agree with everything that we talk about on this show, don't listen to it every day. Just listen to the shows that you really do want to be a part of. Because let's face it, when it comes to New Zealand, there is no choice in alternative media. It is all the same, and we've got to push out the ideas that are original and fun. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll see you again sometime.